Blog Talk Radio.
Among the birthdays on July 19th are the guy that invented a gun. It's unfortunately that's the object that's part of the national focus and the Zimmerman Trayvon Martin tragedy. Samuel Colt was born in 1814. That was near the end of the Napoleonic Wars, as a matter of fact, and the War of 1812. Another famous Easterner, Lizzie Borden. Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her mother 40 whacks, and when she felt that she was done, she gave him another 41. I think that's the thing. And talking about whacks, one of the great doctors who started one of the great medical centers here in the United States, Charles Mayo, was born in 1865. The Mayo Center in Minneapolis is one of the finest medical centers in the United States and in the world. Guy ran for president. He had a funny voice. There's a town and city in Pennsylvania named after him. William Scranton ran for the nomination for president about the time in the 70s, as I recall. He's also governor of Pennsylvania, and the city of Scranton, I guess, is named after his family. And about that same time, one of the boyfriends of one of Lyndon Baines Johnson's daughters, I think it was Lucy, George Hamilton used to squire her around, and he was kind of like a half-baked actor. I don't think Lyndon thought much of George, and George is still around. Among the deaths today, talking about politicians, in 1969 on this date, there was that awful incident at the bridge at Chappaquiddick in Massachusetts where Mary Jo Kopechne was in a car with the late Ted Kennedy, and apparently something was going on. And his car crashed, went off the bridge, and she was trying to get out. And some controversy of whether or not he tried to save her or to save his reputation, because he was going to run for higher office or run for office, as he later did. A lot of questions about Teddy Kennedy. Anyway, Mary Jo Kopechne drowned and died on this day. 1553, another young woman, 15-year-old Protestant Lady Jane Grey, who was in the royal line, so she was a Protestant. She was queen for like 9 days, I think, and it was about the time of Mary Tudor, the eldest daughter of Henry VIII and Elizabeth, and of course Mary Tudor was Roman Catholic. Lady Jane Grey was a Protestant, but there's a couple of movies about her. Fairly accurate. and of course she was beheaded as well as her husband. Another tragedy, but fortunately some of these people were saved, and it's a famous portrait by a famous French artist, the wreck of the Medusa. The Medusa was a French frigate which was incompetently captained, and it ran on a reef near off of Madagascar, I think, or in the off of Africa. And there's a famous painting called The Wreck of the Medusa, and you see these naked and half-naked, starving, nearly dead sailors on this raft sailing to the ship in the foreground. Famous painting. 1848, the first women's rights convention was held, and of course we hear more and more about women running for the presidency, and of course Hillary Clinton's name comes up, but she wouldn't be the first woman to run, nor the first lesbian. The first lesbian was Virginia Woodhull back in the 19th century. She was a leftist, believed in free love, and she was involved with, connected to Karl Marx and Engels, and they frowned on lesbianism and homosexuality and pedophilia, and so they disassociated themselves with her. Also, we've had Barbara Jordan, who was in, I think, she was a law, had a law degree, was on the Watergate committee, had a beautiful, deep contralto voice. She was a lesbian, and her name came up. In fact, her name was part of a ticket with Bayer Rustin, who was a homosexual, who was busted, caught in a car with somebody in Virginia, and they were proposed on an alternative ticket for the presidency. So Hillary wouldn't be the first, and certainly wouldn't be the last. In 1870, on this date, the Franco-Prussian War started. It was started because of the stupidity and the blundering of the nephew of Napoleon, Napoleon III, Louis Napoleon, who had also his imperialist adventures here in North America when he sent French Foreign Legion to back up Archduke Maximiliano, or Maximilian, who he tried to set up on the Mexican throne as Emperor of Mexico. It didn't work out, and it has a connection to the United States and the Steve Nary case, the U.S. Navy sailor case we talk about often. Raul Almison's great uncle was Benito Juarez, who was the successful, was the president of Mexico. He was mestizo, that's Spanish and Indian background, ethnicity. And he fought Maximiliano and the turncoats in the Mexican army who supported Maximilian. And also the United States had just finished, the North had just finished successfully winning the Civil War, so they could turn their attention to the Monroe Doctrine, which meant the Europeans were supposed to stay out of North American affairs and not meddle in this area. And, of course, Louis Napoleon got the hint and withdrew the French Foreign Legion, and that left Maximiliano with no strong military backing. He was defeated in the battle and executed. His famous movie with Brian Ahern, who plays Maximilian, and Betty Davis, who plays Carlotta. Carlotta went, she was the empress, so-called, and she went to Europe to try to drum up support for Maximiliano. It was too late, and I understand she went crazy and never returned to Mexico and couldn't. She'd have probably been put up against a wall also, or sent to a convent. And on this day, in 1941, the FDR administration decided, and I think Eleanor Roosevelt was certainly behind this, to try a small number of black pilots for training to see if they could fight in the then United States Army Air Corps. There wasn't an Air Force then. And we're going to play that, we'll play it in a minute. And also on this day, Churchill, this isn't related, but Churchill started his V for Victory, and then Beethoven's Fifth, bup, 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 bum. Well, here we're going to play the tape on the Tuskegee Army Air Corps. Let's see, we got to get it here. Where is it? We just had it here. Well, what's the matter here? And this is from the archives. What happened here? Oops. We just had it. I still have this problem with the system through all these years. And this is not very well known. There are movies about this. But, of course, the commanding officer was a young lieutenant named Benjamin O. Davis. He was the first black to become a United States Air Force general when the Army Air Corps was dissolved and the U.S. Air Force was set up and the Air Force Academy was set up in Colorado. Now, where is the that clip? I'm going to get it here. It's a very interesting audio 70. Where is it? Shame on me. I'm looking for it. We have about 1,000 tapes and interviews and stuff that we have done that still have to be audited, edited. And so, well, where is it? I'm trying to find it. We had it here a minute ago. Oh, here it is. Here we go. This is the 70th anniversary of the first Black Army Air Corps pilots who were trained at Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, where George Washington Carver, the guy who invented the peanut, or created it, and he was probably the greatest black scientist in American history.
Aviation history at Tuskegee, Alabama. These five men were the first of their race to graduate under the Army Air Force's newly organized plan for training Negro pilots. From all parts of the country, these men have come to take the ACID test. They are anxious and eager. No leniency is shown, and none is asked. After all, each cadet here has passed the same rigid entrance examinations, the same stiff mental and physical requirements as every other cadet. These are just five ordinary men learning to fly for their country. These men are representatives of 30 million fellow Negroes. And all 30 million have their eyes and hopes pinned on them. They flew hard, studied hard, and busted buttons, bulging their chests at inspection. And they made the grade. They are inspired by their leader, Captain Benjamin O. Davis, the first Negro ever to be accorded the traditional recognition by West Point upperclassmen. With basic completed, the new pilots are sent to Selfridge Field for advanced courses in strafing and skip bombing. Here, for the first time, they will fly P-40s, now redesigned and adapted to latest attack methods. Before their bombing flights over the target range, the pilots gather before headquarters for briefing. They have come from all parts of the United States and from all social levels to learn to fly, and if necessary, to die for their homeland. In their attentive eyes, confidence is reflected. Confidence in their ability to handle the task ahead. Confidence arising from the knowledge that they have proven capable of handling our powerful warplane. Negro pilots use some of the finest training bases in the United States. The Tuskegee Air Base at Tuskegee, Alabama, was built entirely by Negroes. In addition to this $4 million establishment, the Negro training program operates the well-equipped Oscoda Air Base in Michigan for advanced training. At Oscoda, pilots also step up from the BT-13 trainers to fast, powerful P-40 fighters. The percentage of washouts is no higher than in any other school. Their ability to grasp and utilize mechanical and technical knowledge is unquestioned. The morale is high, bolstered by the knowledge that they are not a part of an experiment. One of the group, Max Ross, ex-inspector in an Ohio steel mill, won recognition for a valiant effort to save his burning plane. Lieutenant Ross was the first Negro member of the famed Caterpillar Club. With small small bombs fastened to the wings of their P-40s, the pilots dive in low over the ground, release the bombs, and speed away in a sweeping curve as the bombs skip into the target. Results are soon checked, and the deadly accuracy of these young pilots calls for a hearty congratulations all around. The men are prepared to meet the enemy. Then Italy. With Silver Wings 1, these men form the first Negro Pursuit Squadron and are sent into active combat under the command of the first Negro pilot to earn his wings, Lieutenant Colonel Ben Davis. Somewhere in Italy, the mechanics make final checks on their trim P-40s. Excitement is in the air. America's first Negro pilots are to receive their baptism of fire. They are to fly against the Luftwaffe and deliver a blow to the Axis. Bouncing down the improvised metal runway, they head straight for the enemy target, an old, well-fortified Italian city. And the target gets a pasting. For this and other excellent work, the Negro Fighter Squadron has won a group citation from the commanding general of the Air Forces. Personal citations have been won by individual members. The Negro pilot has proved himself a capable, fearless fighter, dangerous and deadly to the enemy, an able defender of the American way of life.
Sense, this is appropriate that we appreciate things that blacks and other ethnic groups have done to defend this country. Excuse me. So we got this cold. Since we're country's being torn left and right on this issue of the Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman, has anybody really looked at George Zimmerman? Why did the media conceal the fact that George Zimmerman's grandfather, great-grandfather, was black? He was of Afro-Peruvian heritage. Now, for people who don't know about the history of slavery and the importation of Africans into this hemisphere, both Spain, well, they all did it. The English were involved. The Dutch started it. The English were involved. I don't know about the French in Haiti, excuse me. French, all the European nations, the big ones at that time, the Dutch, the French, the Spanish, and the Portuguese. The Spanish and the Portuguese were the worst. The British, the Dutch got out of it. The British tried to finally stopped it in the early 18th century and tried to suppress it even off of Africa, intercepting those slave ships. And it was John Wesley of the Methodists who really riled up England to aroused England and said this is immoral. But the Spanish continued to do it, and the Portuguese, Portugal was the last country colony of Brazil, was the last country to stop slavery in the late 1800s, and also the last country to stop the Inquisition. And, of course, half of Brazil today, half of the population there, has some African heritage blood. Very few people knew that Peru had African slaves, but the Spanish brought in slaves not only to Cuba, to Puerto Rico, but to Venezuela, Colombia, all those countries. The only countries that didn't have black slaves, Africans, was Chile and Argentina. I don't think Uruguay had it either, or Paraguay, and maybe Bolivia. But anyway, nobody's brought this up, that George Zimmerman has, if you want to call it this, Negro blood. And look at his mother. She's from South America. And he did a lot of work to help black youth. So he's really been trashed by these morons in the media. But this is not unusual. We've had this problem in the history, in world history. We had the Captain Dreyfus trial in France, which is also has some interesting parallels with the Steve Neri trial here in San Francisco, U.S. Navy, where an 18-year-old sailor was put on trial illegally, and the U.S. Navy and the U.S. Marine Corps were put on trial as homophobic in the Dreyfus trial, which had some similar things involving male prostitution operated by a government employee, France. The Jews of France were put on trial in that notorious French court martial of the Captain Dreyfus court martial. But if we look at a recent American history, back in the early 19th century, we had the Leo Frank trial here in Marietta, Georgia. And here was a guy who came from New York. He was an engineer, and he had worked was a manager of a pencil factory. A lot of anti-Semitism, and of course the Ku Klux Klan was running around, either hiding under their sheets or even out in the open. A young white girl named Mary Fragan was found beaten, murdered, and raped and murdered. Leo Frank was falsely accused. He was a young man, about 31 years old, married, Jewish heritage, and he was put on trial and was condemned to die. And the governor of Georgia commuted his sentence, and he was trashed for doing this. The Ku Klux Klan stirred up all this anti-Jewish hatred and all at the usual public disorder and demanded that he be killed. And they abducted him from the jail and lynched him. He was lynched. Then we had later in Alabama the notorious Scottsboro boys. These were during the Depression, all youth, whether you were black, white, Latino. If you were poor, you rode the rails to find a job. And they were in this boxcar with what turned out to be white trash. And something happened, and this white girl accused these black boys of raping her. So there was a notorious trial in Alabama. And they were going to, of course, if you raped or even looked at a white woman in some of those jurisdictions down there, you would be convicted, sent away to work in a chain gang, or be if that didn't happen, you were lynched. And the NAACP hired a Jewish lawyer from New York to try to defend these boys, known as the Scottsboro Boys. Then we had a case here in San Francisco during the labor unrest in the 30s on the waterfront. There was several riots, and I believe a policeman was killed, and a longshoreman, or two of them, were falsely accused of murdering the cop. We'll get more details on this because it went up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And they were railroaded, and it was politically charged, and newspapers wanted to hang these people, hang these longshoremen. And then we had the Rose DiAquino, or Tokyo Rose, trial here in San Francisco, where anti-Japanese feeling was brought into the it was very apparent in the federal trial for alleged treason. She got 10 years sent away. She was an American citizen, got caught up in Japan just before Pearl Harbor. I met her, and I did some work on her case independently for the ACLU at the time when Ford pardoned her. Then we had this case, which we're still involved in, Steve Neri, an 18-year-old Native American ethnicity, who was drug-stalked and stalked, drug raped and railroaded here in San Francisco, one of the most notorious trials in the whole history of the state and of the federal court system. And, of course, during the trial, the U.S. Army, U.S. Navy and the U.S. Air Force were put on trial as homophobic. So this is when all these political agendas are injected into these criminal trials. And there are others out there, but these are the most notorious that come to mind. Now, also, one of the problems with the so-called immigration reform, or I call it, and other people call these people economic migrants, because they're not coming here to become citizens, a lot of them. They're coming here because they can't find work or not enough work down in the countries from where they came from. And they're trying to feed their families. And some of these people work 7 days a week. I know some of these people. They try to send money home to their families, and they're not coming here down at immigration to say, I want to take citizenship lessons and courses to become an American citizen. So, no, they're economic migrants. But one of the problems with this so-called immigration reform is we have more and more of these people. When they do get money, they buy cars, but because they can't qualify as drivers, they drive anyway, and if they don't have a driver's license, they can't get auto insurance. When they get into a collision or an accident, as one senior citizen found out, his uninsured motorist kicks in, and of course his company doesn't want to pay, even though it was not his fault. And more of these cases occur where unlicensed drivers who happen to be economic migrants are driving cars, injuring people, and this causes more expensive taxpayer, because police have to come out, ambulances have to come out, hospital care, if there's damage to city property, all of these expenses are incurred by these people who are economic migrants who are driving without auto insurance. So we're proposing that the Congress better look at putting this into this any proposed immigration or economic migrant legislation, that these people be required to take driver's tests, take a study, and to get auto insurance. In fact, it's the law that you can't drive without having auto insurance, but it's not enforced. And, of course, the so-called immigration reform people, they don't even want to talk about this. So this is an issue that we need to discuss, because more and more people are being injured, and not only being injured, but being killed or maimed for life. So we'll be back Monday. We'll have more on the Trayvon Martin case and a lot of things, questions about his father. Why did he abandon his son? Why did he take the kid away from Alicia Stanley, who was the only real mother that he had, even though she wasn't his birth mother? And the way this family has treated her, she's the one. When Trayvon Martin was with her, he was a well-behaved young boy. But something happened, and I understand, if this is accurate, that Mr. Martin's current girlfriend kicked Trayvon out, and this was shortly before this unfortunate tragedy happened. And, of course, we have the situation in Milwaukee where an older white man, 75 years old, apparently suffering from dementia, accused black neighbor of stealing his guns, and he shot this kid. And so wonder we haven't heard about that, but that's got to be dealt with. So fortunately, these people don't play poker, but they do play politics, unfortunately. And we'll end with our theme.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the sound?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight. Possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
Which Friday are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say, neither one. I never even met them.
I say, when you got a pair of jacks, bet up.
Politics and polka, politics and polka, shuffle up and cards and find the joker. Neither game for children, neither game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
when to call a bluff.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paraphrase.
Bet 'em.
Well, there are a lot of betting. We'll be back Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, and you'll see this French woman who was getting her latte, and she parked illegally, and they crosswalked, blocking handicapped people, damaged a legally parked car's tire, and was very arrogant about it, and she's a wine merchant. We don't know the quality of her stuff, but this is the arrogant attitude of these latte leisure class, and so it's something we've got to deal with. So we'll go to Amicus Veritas YouTube, and also there'll be an update on some of the things you need to know about airports. This is Peter Paul Brazola. Have a safe weekend, and good night.